And we will have some help with the digestion from first from Nina Nyberg Sørensen. She's a senior researcher at the Danish Institute for International Studies, and she has been writing a lot about migration and development. The floor is yours, please. I stole 5 minutes from you, so you actually kept your time.
Good morning, everybody. First of all, I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me and the authors for writing an excellent report that I think is useful for not only Sweden but Denmark, even though we come out very badly, as we knew we would. I have been asked to point to some of the strengths and some of the weaknesses in the report, and I think there are more strengths than weaknesses, but as the authors have already pointed to the strengths, I will just summarize these and then point to maybe not weaknesses, but challenges. I think the report provides an excellent numbers of evidences of overspending, often hidden from public oversight, so we get access to knowledge that is not easily available. It also provides a very good catalogue, I think, of changing policy foci, how poverty reduction become changed for security concerns over time, even in cases where traditional migration development policy language is continued. I also think that the terminology overview that you give on migrant categorization and sort of the terminology used in migration management parlor is very good to have at hand. More importantly, I think the report is very strong in pointing to the risks of having short-term policy objectives or goals at the expense of providing long-term solutions. For instance, and the example you yourself give in forgetting more distant displacement crises that in the longer term may actually also affect the global situation. And another risk you point to is the political pressure to give evidence of short-time spending and rapid visible impact or results, which I also think is very helpful. I find that the recommendations you provide for future practices in the fields of aid predictability, the incorporation of research and programming, transparency in budgeting and reporting, and opportunities for strengthening and meaningfully incorporating migration and development concerns give us a lot of food for thought and concrete recommendations as to where to go from here. Among the interesting findings, I think the surprisingly increase in total European aid flows up to 2015, despite popular skepticism, is very interesting. One could ask, of course, to what extent this is a result of various factors. For instance, the UK dramatic increase in their funding due to a government policy of reaching the 0.7 goal, or that Germany started to count pre-asylum expenditures in their ODA in this period. They did not do that before 2015. And I think being very clear on such issues is necessary when we discuss the report's messages. Another interesting finding is that the most positive outcomes of the current political debate is the increased focus on the relationship between development and humanitarian assistance, as you also forwarded yourself. I think that this topic has been there for many years, but it has had very little traction, and perhaps it will now. And then there's a huge knowledge base to build on. The point in part 1.18 on longer-term implications is quite sharp. In particular, the bullet which states that the political expectations for ODA spending to reduce migration flows are high, despite the fact, and I quote, "No evidence has, however, been found in the case studies that the communicated objective to reduce irregular migration has translated into indicators to measure success at the technical level." I mean, that's very clear. In short, nobody has a clue as to what works. Hopefully, the Swedes will take a lead on an international evaluation of these measures, as Sweden has been at the forefront of this for many years. We really need research, analysis, and evaluation here. A few weaknesses. I'm not a budget expert, but one could question the robustness of the data. I'm not familiar with data from other countries than Denmark, but in Denmark, we operate with these budget commitments that we report for future spending. So I strongly believe that we will fall even lower if that form of budgeting is taken in. I mean, the consequence is that Denmark is running in relation to DAC numbers on programs that were decided several years ago, and they have been reported. The decline will only be visible in years to come. A few other things that caught my eye: the title "Making Waves." I really didn't understand what you were referring to. If it was waves in development policies or waves in migration flows. And I think the wave metaphor somehow stages the regulatory regime of border enforcement by reference to some inundation in a way, or invasion of irregular migrants, when it is a fact that most refugees remain in the global south. They are not coming to our part of the world. And most people entering Europe during the period that you evaluate has come from refugee-producing countries and not irregular migration flows as such. And therefore, the mix in the report of asylum seekers and irregular migration might give rise to concern, even though there are admittedly overlaps. Migration categorization is inherently political. You show it in your report. And they are not necessarily indicative of the level of suffering, need for protection, or even ability to contribute to development locally or from abroad. And I think that point could be clearer, and it could also be incorporated in your box one on terminology. A longer-term perspective, and I know very well how that is not possible within a short time frame, but it would reveal that the current level is not of pressure is not unprecedented, as you write. I mean, we had similar pressures around 1990, so I think that is important. And one could also see changes in development emphasis on seeing migration as a problem or as an opportunity if one takes longer time perspective. So maybe for discussion, that could be good. Do I have 1 minute more? Yeah. Security aspects of migration is mentioned but not sufficiently explored. You can't explore everything, but I think it's important. The securitization of European and bilateral migration development policies have consequences for particular kinds of spending. In a couple of places, the report states that conflict and uprooting have provided space for human smuggling, but it could as well be argued that stricter border control is what feeds the smuggling industry. considerable funding goes into risk awareness campaigns, such as anti-trafficking campaigns, that seems to have little effect when the risks of staying put are equally high. Large sums have also been allocated to anti-trafficking campaigns and assistance to victims of human trafficking, despite the fact that research shows that it is hard to find the victims and that their numbers are much lower than other types of suffering in this crisis. The increased focus on combating human smuggling should not betray, I think, the interest of the most vulnerable refugees, as it often comes to be, also because it's an easy way to attract funding from donors. And I think that what the EU and the countries, the bilateral donors, should be aware of is the unintended consequences of current migration management policies in terms of sustaining and nurturing parts of that industry that may actually also sustain the flows. So I think my time is up, and I'll keep the rest for later.
Thank you, Nina. You will be back in the panel later. And now we will welcome Christoph Thomas from our sister organization, Delmi, dealing with migration in Sweden. He has also been on the reference group. Please.
Thank you, Gunn-Britt and Eba, for inviting me. And thank you, Andrew and Anna, for a very well-written and well-researched report. I will give my comments in a different way. I will speak broadly on the root causes of migration and links to development, as well as the EU-Africa relations. And Delmi recently published a report on migration cooperation between the EU and Africa. We could start from the point that migration today is integrated in the Sustainable Development Goals and the Agenda 2030, and it wasn't part of the previous Millennium Development Goals. But today, within Goal 10, reduce inequality within and among countries, it's noted that governments should facilitate orderly, safe, regular, and responsible migration and mobility of people, including through the implementation of planned and well-managed migration policies. Another point is that by 2030, the general cost of sending remittances should be reduced to 3%. Today it's roughly 7-8%, but 12% in African countries. And the value of remittances at $430 billion today for developing countries by far bypass ODA flows three times higher the value of what migrants send back home than the ODA. And in the Sustainable Development Goals, the idea to integrate migration is to strengthen the positive contributions made by migrants to development, economic and social development. And migration should ultimately be a free choice, not a necessity for people. Obviously, achieving this will require more aid funding to be spent on migration-related issues. Migration is also at the top of the global agenda. In September last year, there was a UN General Assembly high-level meeting on migration, and the outcome was the New York Declaration, partly aiming at improving global and regional responsibility sharing and improving access to protection and resettlement for refugees, also foreseeing two global compacts by 2018, one on refugees and one on migration. So there is an important global process going on in this regard. If we look at the refugee challenge alone, there is a very uneven distribution globally. 86% of world refugees reside in developing countries, and 57% of the refugees reside only in 10 individual countries. if we look at resettlement, which is one of the aims of UNHCR for lasting solutions for refugees, there are only 100,000 refugees resettled per year compared to the needs of 1.2 million and compared to the 65 million displaced people under the responsibility of UNHCR. So there is much to do here. And if we look at the EU perspective, the root causes approach to migration has been growing steadily over the years, combining it with various attempts to reduce unwanted migration, but also to allow for some labor migration, some wanted migration, and to arrive at better links between migration and development. I think it's important to look at what we know from research. There is now plenty of data collected by the UN and the World Bank on the relationship between economic growth and emigration. Typical patterns show an inverted U-curve. Low-income or lower-middle-income countries show a positive, significant association between average incomes and emigration. The relationship changes markedly somewhere around the GDP at purchasing power parity of between $6,000 and $8,000. And there are plenty of countries below that level of income in Africa, for example. But among countries that reach a higher income level than $6,000 to $8,000 per person, emigration is being reduced. So this is the foreseeable future where we can see that many countries surrounding EU are in a situation where we can expect even more migration pressure. And considering this, what should be our realistic expectations on achieving both improved development and improved migration management with the same policy tools and programs? I think we need to keep in mind three different sets of uses of development aid for migration. A, to increase the positive development benefits from migration through remittances, skills transfers, and diaspora contributions. B, to reduce the negative side effects such as irregular migration, smuggling, brain drain, etc., lack of attention to migrants' rights, and see what this study is focusing on, the in-donor refugee costs deductions. There is some confusion between short-term humanitarian emergency needs and long-term development objectives. While the refugee crisis is a humanitarian emergency in its own right that requires immediate attention, immediate results cannot be expected from supporting long-term development objectives that supposedly will address the root causes of displacement and instability. Pressure to show results within a short time frame may create a bias in favor of aid programming that allows a rapid disbursement of funds, but this does not necessarily ensure quick results. Tackling the root causes of irregular migration is a lengthy, non-linear, unpredictable process, depending on many more contextual factors than support from financial or technical programming development cooperation. But still, we have a narrative in the EU-Africa cooperation context where the idea is that we can actually influence unwanted migration flows by adding some aid or some pressure that way. But development efficiency or aid efficiency will depend on the rationale behind the disbursements of funds and the design of the interventions. Is it the EU's fear of irregular migration, or is it the EU commitment to sustainable development which is guiding interventions? And how can these different objectives be united and delivered in parallel? What we see now is a mix of positive and negative incentives in relation to partner countries, especially to African countries and the neighborhood. And this will gradually be integrated into the EU development and trade policies to reward those countries who cooperate effectively with the EU on migration management, readmission and returns, and to ensure consequences for those who refuse. So one question is how to strike the right balance to deliver all the expected results. What kind of carrots and sticks, and how can unwanted consequences be avoided, unwanted side effects? Do we see a future where we have a negative conditionality on aid, for example? We haven't seen it in practice yet, but it's in the cards. The question is, how is that going to work in practice? We also see the criteria for prioritizing regions and countries for support resources to countries along major African migration routes and reintegration measures in communities of origin might be in line with the control policy objectives, but it may potentially conflict with development cooperation objectives because many of the migrants, they don't really originate in the poorest countries, and development aid usually is given to the poorest, while migrants need some resources, so it's not the poorest who reach Europe. So will there be monitoring to ensure that the thematic and geographic priorities of aid spending are proper? So I think I'm very close to the end of my time. I will just summarize. So we have already seen a lot of development aid going into cooperation. For example, following the EU-African Union summit last year in Valletta, which led to a Valletta Action Plan and the EU-Africa Emergency Trust Fund. Much of that funding comes from development money. But the question is, how can this funding be better adapted to the migration objectives in the SDGs so that funding is both looking at how to advance the positive aspects of migration for development as well as reaching a good level of cooperation based on mutual trust with, for example, the African partners? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Christoph, for outlining all our not so easy objectives and all the junctures that we'll have to try to get through.